Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com and Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. I'm your host, John Stallone, and this week we got a friend of mine on the phone, actually on the computer. We're not actually on the phone today. She's a outdoor writer, TV personality, a 26-year bow hunting vet, and one hell of a hunter. And it's Jana Waller. How are you doing, Jana?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So I see you're in Greece on vacation.
I am. I'm actually in the
Athens, Wisconsin.
Yeah, not exactly. I could turn it around and show you the Lake Koshkonong here in Wisconsin that I'm sitting on. But no, I'm visiting my family this week, so I don't have my normal typical head mounts all behind me, but this little Greek isle will work.
Yeah. I'd rather be there anyway. Actually, they're getting a big heat wave over there. My parents just got back from Italy, and Europe is just getting like just hammered. And, you know, a lot of those places don't have air conditioning still, you know. Oh. So, yeah, I don't think I'd want to be there right now. But anyway, so before we roll into some questions I got for you, give us a little bit of a little rundown about yourself, you know, what you do and how you got started in hunting and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the beautiful state of Wisconsin, just right in between Madison and Milwaukee, and was always a tomboy as a kid. I'm the second of two daughters, and definitely as much as I love my sister, she's the amazing mom, we're so opposite and different. And part of it may be because my dad, I'm sure, wanted a boy for his second and only wanting two children. And mm-hmm. The other part, I think it's just innate and sort of in your blood. And, you know, I was a little girl playing in the mud and trapping frogs in the pool and, you know, loving to go fishing. And when I was old enough to walk the fields with my dad, we would go looking for pheasants and, you know, just take strolls through the woods. And so he really fostered that passion for nature, even mm-hmm. at a young age. And he signed me up for hunter safety when I was 12 years old, 1983. And I had to get my safety card the other day, and I looked at the day, I'm like, whoa, that was a long time ago. But, but you know, it's one of the best things he ever did. And we took, right after that, we took a couple of road trips out to South Dakota, pheasant hunting from Wisconsin. And they were some of my favorite memories, you know, as a kid. Just spending time with my dad, but, you know, as funny as this sounds, I felt important because I was one of the main bird gutters in the lineup of hunters, and I thought that was so cool at the age of 12.
Nice.
My dad still jokes today that Jana doesn't field dress her game, she autopsies them, because I think it's fascinating, and I've been into science and stuff like that. So anyway, he started getting into big game hunting when I was in high school, and as well as my high school boyfriend used to bow hunt, so I would sit in the trees with him and watch the deer. And I never really had the passion for big game hunting until my freshman year in college when my dad called me up. I went to college at UW-Whitewater, just right by my hometown of Fort Atkinson. He called me up and he said, "I stuck my first buck. I stuck it
Nice.
last evening. Can't find it. Do you want to go help me look?" And I was only 15 minutes away, so heck yeah. So dad and I met up down Cold Spring Road and went in and found the last track of blood. And I picked up a set of tracks that went into this cornfield. And it was really cool and sort of scientific to try to look for blood and figure out where the tracks were going. And long story short, I noticed dirt starting to drag, and I kept looking up in every row of corn, and sure enough, I found him and screamed, "Dad, Dad, I got him!" He came running over to me, and I can honestly say I had never seen my dad more excited. And he actually equated finding his first whitetail buck with a bow to the birth of his two daughters, that kind of excitement. And I thought, wow, I want to feel that.
Nice.
I want to know what that adrenaline is like. And so I bought a bow. Oh, and then at the same time, I also met my very first in-person female bow hunter at Whitewater. She was around my age, a couple years older. And I remember I kind of had that light bulb moment. Well, if she's doing it, I could do it. I always tried to pull back my dad's bow or my boyfriend's bow, never could do it, never really thought much about it. And then she was the first one to kind of spark that in me of, well, you got to get a bow for you. You have to have the poundage and draw weight and draw length. So anyway, got a bow that year, my freshman year in college, practiced a lot. Following year, got my first doe, and that was 26 years ago, I think, and I've been hooked ever since. Been really blessed to bow hunt the world, and
That's awesome.
yeah, I've been in the hunting industry for about a decade now. Started outdoor writing just to connect with other hunters, so I'd have other feet. I started writing for womenhunters.com, and it was fun for me to have a group of women support one another and talk about hunts and gear. And then I started slowly writing for a few hunting magazines. And then was on actually, I met Jim. Jim is my producer, my boyfriend of Skullbound TV. And probably the number one question I get is, how did you guys start Skullbound TV? And Jim was already working on a show with Magnum Global Media on Outdoor Channel. And was kind of looking to do his own thing. And we had kind of started long distance dating. He was from Montana. And at the same time I met him, I was working on a pilot with Animal Planet of all networks. They had found me through womenhunters.com. They were doing a pilot on sustainable living, women who hunt and live off what they hunt and fish. And long story short, that pilot never went anywhere. But then Jim said, "Why don't we do our own show?" I believe I was the first solo female hosted show on the network. I could be wrong on that, but he said there's not that many solo female hosted shows out there.
No.
A lot of great couple shows. We'd all watched, Ralph and Vicky and Lee and Tiffany and Pat and Nicole and all these amazing couples, but there really wasn't a focus on solo female. With my weird skull business, we decided that was a cool twist to tie it into that and call it Skullbound. And we literally hunted a bit together and filmed a little bit, put a pilot together, pitched it at SHOT Show to the Sportsman's Channel, and right now I'm currently filming for season 7.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I remember the first time I saw it pop up, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna check out, we'll take a look at this. And I'm gonna be perfectly honest with you. My first gut reaction, and I'm gonna go into this, actually one of my questions, so I'm kind of glad we kind of going this way, is that I said, all right, here's another pretty face. And then I watched it and I was like, huh, she actually knows what the fuck she's doing. It wasn't like it was still kind of like, 7 years ago, the women that I mean, you mentioned a few that were very,
Prevalent.
predominant, in the industry, but they're all whitetail hunters. And there was really no like Western game women out there. I mean, there was a few, but they weren't like in the big spotlight, I know like Melissa Bachman and stuff like that, but like you said, she didn't have her own show. She kind of moonlights and shows up on a bunch of different, shows and stuff like that. And, and I, at first I was a little skeptical, and I was like, ah, yeah. And I started watching the show, and I was like, this is good. It's good content. And, it's always good when you're getting what you want out of it. And then the bonus is you get to see a pretty lady doing it. So,
Thank you very much. And you know, it's funny, I completely agree with you. I see it all the time, even today, especially right now in the last 5 years. There's been such an insurgence of women wanting to get into the hunting industry. And you're right, we all tend to be a little judgmental, and there's that, oh, can she walk the walk? Can she talk the talk? And I don't think there's anything wrong with kind of putting up that little bit of wall first, because there are, unfortunately, a lot of phonies out there.
Oh
There
my
are a lot
God.
of beautiful women that just want the attention from hunting, or even just being in camo or pulling a bow back in the backyard, or don't really. And I'm not, whatever it takes to get more women in the hunting industry, trust me, I'm absolutely for that, and I try to be as supportive as I can. But there are those that maybe have what they were wanting out of it isn't the experience of hunting or fishing. It's
It's
they
the
want the attention.
attention.
Yeah. And that's where I have a problem. In fact, I was on a really interesting, awesome Facebook Live last week with a bunch of icons in the industry that I tremendously respect and who've been around for a long time. And we had so much fun. I think it was a 12 of us talking about bow hunting and our passion for it and what's wrong with today and what's great about today being a woman. And one of the things I brought up was a post I had seen on Instagram, and it was a gal topless in the mountains, and it was all about confidence. And she had her camo pants on and everything. And that's okay if you're looking for Instagram followers. You're probably going to get a lot of them doing that, so that's okay. But the number one question I get from younger ladies is, how do I make a difference? How do I get out there? How do I get my name out there? I love to hunt. I love to field dress. I love to be a bird at all. How do I? And my first thing is, don't do that. I've been blessed to have great sponsors, and none of them would touch that kind of post with a 10-foot pole. If I tried to do like that, granted I'm a little older, but if I could tried to do something like that, my sponsors would drop me. They are not going to want that. They want strong, classy, confident women who can talk the talk.
Well, you said it. You hit the nail on the head. You were basically answered the question to her right there. It was put out the content of you field dressing, of you harvesting, hanging trail cameras, whatever it is, but hunting content, not just selfies of a cute girl in booty shorts drawing back her bow in her backyard. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. We all like to look at that as guys. We're not, I'm not gonna sit here and say that we don't. But I think that's the main problem that we're getting in social media, especially because it's very easy for stigma to grow, for that stuff to grow in social media, is that every girl with a bow in her hand or a rifle in her hand is just a girl that's out there trying to get, a chick that's trying to get some attention, basically, and try to grow social media. So it's like, it's really important for ladies like yourself, I think, to be out there showing. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of guys that you would hike their butts into the ground and you can hunt their asses off. And those are the kind of women we need propelling the sport so other women get into it. So my first question to you, go ahead.
I was just
Sorry.
going to say, I think it's important too. I don't ever bash people. I'm not going to go on there and make a comment on
Oh
it,
no.
or I'm not going to. I think that's important too. I think we need to stay classy. I think we need to pull together as hunters. I think we shouldn't be elitists. I've been bow hunting longer than long distance rifle hunting. I love them both. I love it all. I think it's important that we're inclusive and that we don't attack one another. But being on TV or in magazines, I get the question a lot of how do I get there? What do I do? And basically live the lifestyle, if that's truly what you love to do. Post, content like you talked about, real life, but don't don't sexualize it. It
Right.
there's ways to be beautiful and sexy and classy with your clothes on while you're
Right.
hunting, fishing, you know. So
Exactly.
I think it's important not to bash, but I do have to give advice when people ask me. This is just my two cents, but I hear it from my sponsors that, like I say, they want confidence and they want unique content. They're not looking for cleavage and booty shorts, you know.
Right. No, I agree. I think it's sad. Maybe 7 years ago when you started, this wasn't the case. But nowadays, the fact that you're on TV, it actually takes a little bit away from your takes a little bit away from you. You know that? It actually it lowers your social status as an expert nowadays, because there was such a insurgence, I guess, of or resurgence of people wanting their own TV show, that everybody and their mom was scrambling to put money together and start a TV show, and it just kind of became this like, whoever had the money got a TV show. I mean, it's really the network's fault, because
And they throw their pretty girlfriend in it or pretty wife in it to get ratings up, even though it might not have been very authentic. Maybe she wasn't
Right.
in it that much. I literally watched an episode one time where a guy had his wife, she shot at a bear and she didn't hit it very well, and she threw the gun at him and go, "You finish, you finish." And I'm like, did that really just happen? Like, I couldn't. That's an example of, in my opinion, you know, her heart might not have been in the right place, you know. But
Exactly.
yeah, you're right. There is that little bit of hurdle or battle to get through with some people of wanting, you know, credibility or wanting your resume, so to speak. And I understand that. I'm never ashamed to say, well, here's my resume. Here's my, you know, here's what I've done, where I've gone, what I, and there's no, I don't judge that. I kind of get where people are coming from with that. And I'm really blessed to be old. And I've been doing this for so long that I have a resume. You know what I mean? That I've got 2.5 decades of bow hunting experience. So that doesn't bother me. I guess if I couldn't back up my smack, then I'd be, you know, a little bit more secure about it. But it's great. I think it's a wonderful time to be a woman in this industry. There are, you know, there are a lot of open doors for women who love, have just passion for being outdoors, who love the environment, who, you know, belong to all these conservation groups because they believe in the mission. And then that's a part of hunting. I mean, that's such a missed part on TV. It was really important for me when we started Skullbound that we show that conservation side. And we did a conservation minute on every episode. And that's I before I even did Skullbound TV, I was involved here in Wisconsin with my dad's Ducks Unlimited group and Quality Deer Management and Pheasants Forever. Now I'm a Westerner, live in the mountains of Montana, and I belong to 7 different conservation groups. I'm a lifetime member of 4 of them and passionate about them because it's such a missed message on TV, which is still our biggest platform. And people who don't hunt don't understand that we hunters are animal lovers, and we're the ones putting our dollars to work in every single state in this country. And you know, I think that needs to be blasted way stronger than it is, you know.
Well, I mean, here's the problem, and I've said it a million times on my podcast, and is that hunters, we're
Nope.
not a unified group. We already touched on it. We're so quick to judge our fellow hunter. We're always arguing about, who shoots what bow, who's a bow hunter, who's a rifle hunter, who's a weekend warrior, who's a diehard, and blah, 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 blah. We're always comparing because it's such an ego-driven sport, unfortunately.
It can be,
You
yeah.
know, it's like everything. And now with social media, everything's look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm so awesome. I'm so awesome. I'm so awesome. You know, I could do 500,
Yeah.
meter dash in 20 seconds, and whatever. I mean, it's like, listen, I get it. I fall victim to it myself, because I, you know, and you, I'm sure you have to do, you got bills to pay. So your sponsors, they support you. You have to support them back. You have to put out a certain amount of content so they get the return on investment, yada, yada, yada. But I feel like when I got into this industry, Jesus, like 17 years ago now. Or technically, if you wanted, when I first started getting paid to be a hunter 20 years ago, everything was different. Everything
Right.
was different. Like pro staff, it meant promotional staff, but it was also professional staff. It
Right.
wasn't just whoever had the most, So the problem is the industry's perpetuating it. And social media is making it that much worse, and it's just a domino effect, and it's going, it's going, it's going. It's pretty sad.
I
It's pretty
actually
sad, and I don't know what to do to right the ship, to be honest with you, except for me bitching about it all the time, but which I is doing nothing.
Very much so agree. It back in the day, it was an honor to be on a pro staff, and me, as you experienced earlier today, I'm the biggest techie idiot on the entire planet. I run my own Instagram. All of our Skullbone stuff is me. It's Facebook, Gemini, it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But trust me when I say it took a lot to learn those three platforms. I don't want some marketing people, speaking for me or answering questions for me. It's me. But it has gone to where pro staff doesn't really mean anything anymore. In a lot of ways. I get approached all the time, obviously, because of the platform, and I usually, don't even bother with it at all because it has been diluted so much. And I really respect those companies that actually haven't jumped on that bandwagon and don't have 2,000 people on their pro staff. I'll take a look at them, and I'll look at, like, for example, Cryptek. Cryptek is my camouflage company, and I could not be more proud to be on their pro staff. Their pro staff, I'm one
It's
of
a
the first
good group of
non-militia.
guys, for sure.
They're amazing. Butch and Josh, who founded Cryptek, are two former Apache helicopter pilots who've been through hell and back and persevered. And their pro staff is, if you go on and look on their site, it's impressive. It's some of this country's most amazing heroes, from Chris Kyle to Clint Romesha, Medal of Honor recipient, to just these incredible men that, and women. There's another gal on there who's amazing. To be a part of that I'm very proud of. But that does not represent the majority of pro staffs, and
No.
I agree with you there.
I think honestly it's the burden is on the manufacturers of the products to start righting the ship and really only employing or supporting true ambassadors of the sport and not just people who have giant followings. There's so many guys out there that and women even more so now that have built giant social media followings and they have the ear of the public and I get it 'cause that's important too. You want to be able to reach as many people as possible. But a lot of these people they follow the money. They jump ship every time they get a better deal. So, one minute they're like, "Oh, this is the best bow ever." No, wait, this is the best bow ever. No, this is the best bow ever. For instance, I've been with Matthew since 2001, and yeah, they haven't every year. I haven't been in love with every bow that they've made, but as a company, they stayed true. They stayed with their thing, and that's why I stayed. They always built, something that I can rely on. Like I said, I don't think every bow they ever built was awesome. And anybody who promotes a company and says every product they ever come out with is awesome is full of shit, in my opinion. But so anyway,
Jeff,
I digress.
we have a lot, and I completely agree. I've been with Matthews too, and it's only been 3 years. My previous bow company before that went out of business, so that was the
Oh,
reason
geez.
for the jump. But I'm not a jumper. I can't stand it. One of the things it irritates me is people jumping for more money. And to me, my sponsors, I am blessed to say that I believe in every single sponsor I have. I use their gear. They are not just friends, so I'm going to represent them. They're great quality products. I use them in my lifestyle. I'm in the field over 200 days out of the year. I also think it's really important that when people start to get into deals with companies, that they don't just, oh, that they're going to give me XYZ, but they really look at the company, look at their morals, look at their history, And you want to be celebrated, not tolerated. And I think that that's a my friend Jules McQueen says that all the time, and it's such a great line of you want to work with people who celebrate you, not just tolerate you, or are going to use your social media for the year. And then, I can't stand that. But no, I agree with you. I'm really lucky to have people that we've been with primarily since the very beginning.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure you and I could sit here and bitch about it for the rest of the hour here, but I'm going to jump into a couple of questions that are, hunting related, because I try to keep this as an educational podcast as possible so people can learn to improve themselves. So my first question actually is, well, you know what? Let me start off with what's your favorite animal to hunt and why?
I don't know how I get that asked a lot. I don't know how anyone could ever answer that. Because every single different hunt has different facets to the adventure that I like. Obviously, I live in Montana. I absolutely love archery elk hunting. The only bad side about it is it's such a busy time of year for me. I don't get to chase elk for 6 weeks in the mountains. I'm
No.
flying all over here, but of course, I absolutely love it. I live in the Bitterroot Mountains where we can literally go elk hunting, bear hunting, whitetail. A muley is a special draw, but within 15 minutes of my house. So
Wow.
the one thing that I'm surprised about in the last decade of my life is how much I've come to love bear hunting. I love it. I spent probably 20 plus days, no more than that. I probably spent 30 plus days bear hunting this spring between Montana and Canada. Montana's no baiting. It's all spot and stalk with a rifle. I was blessed with a gorge, my most beautiful colored phase bear I've ever taken.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
Oh, thanks. I love the meat. We use the best cuts of meat on the grill, marinated. They're delicious. Then we smoke all four hams. People think bear is greasy and gross. It's not. It's one of
It's
my,
awesome.
it is. It's one of my favorite wild game meats. And when you are bear hunting, you're just experience like you've got you're cooped up. You've been in the house all winter long. If you're in the western states or at least mostly crappy weather, it's so fun to get out. And as the mountains come alive again and get green again, and you see elk and they're elk and deer and all these other just the wildlife comes to life because they've been tucked in wintertime too. And I just absolutely love spring bear season in Montana. I love it. Of course, if anything, I've done more than any other style of hunting. It's bow hunting whitetails. I don't live in Buffalo County in Wisconsin, which you always hear those mythical stories coming out of Buffalo County. Where I hunt primarily is my dad's cabin near the Wisconsin Dells, but I've had a lot of really great success. Most of the hunts I'm of my whitetail bow hunts are all kind of do it yourself, either climb or tree stand or going and sitting in the permanent stands that are up at my dad's. But I've had been lot, have a lot of nice record bucks doing that. But I love it all. I love a new experience too. In fact, yesterday I just got done writing an article. I'm a little late. I find it I'm not having enough time in the day for all my skull work and articles and the show and. So my articles are coming out a little late, but I just finished an article about bow hunting sika deer in Maryland. And this is gonna sound so corny, but when I finished it last night, it took me all day to, I'm a really slow writer. Took me all day to write the story. It's gonna be in Bow Hunting World magazine. I literally read it back to Jim on the phone and cried. That's how much that hunt meant to me. Like it was, everything went right. It was an amazing experience. I went into the hunt feeling like even if I just got to lay my eyes on a nice stag, it would be a success. I'd never seen this creature in the wild. These are free-range sika deer that were released in Maryland back in 1916 and 1920. And I, on the second day of the hunt, was blessed with the number seventh sika ever taken with a bow on the Maryland record books. Now, anyone who watches Skullbound knows they don't watch my show for all the trophies that I take in there.
It's like me.
Yeah, like it's not about it.
I got the Museum of Medium in my house. That's what my friends call it.
I love that. That's me. And so it just was amazing. Dumb luck, but I'll take dumb luck with bow hunting any day of the week. Happened to place a good shot after the adrenaline surge that was coursing through my body because I was looking out at this king of the Sitka stags. And it was fun to finally get it on paper. I'm looking forward to that getting published. I'm not sure what month it's coming out in, but that was a truly unique hunting opportunity that in the 26 years I've been bow hunting, I'd never even heard of it before. I'd never seen a show, with Sitka deer. Of course, you hear about all the exotics down in Texas, but no, this was free range in the swamps of Maryland, different
Yeah,
smells,
it's
different
crazy.
sounds. These are little 90-pound stags that bugle like elk. I mean, it was amazing. So I can't name a favorite.
Yeah, I was supposed to go. I'm trying to think if it was 2000, no, 2015. I had it on the books. I had met a gentleman. He owned good size, a farm or whatever you want to call it, a ranch. Not really a ranch, but the size of property over there. And he had a bunch of Sitka. And he called me up like 3 weeks before the hunt, and he's like, "Hey, John, I'm sorry, but I end up selling the property." And I'm like, "I finally got a chance to go, and I couldn't go, and I was so pissed." Yeah, so that's still something I've been wanting to do. That's definitely on my bucket list. I definitely want to go to Maryland and get one of those.
It was amazing. I went with Dale Gertz, who's just a friend of mine. He actually approached me at SHOT Show and he said, "Hey, I love your show. I love what you stand for. Would you be interested?" And I thought, yeah, that sounds hot. First of all, my first response was, huh? Like
Yeah.
what? Sick of what? And ended up taking sort of a gamble. I talked to him a lot about the hunt, and he's a very experienced, well-versed hunter himself, and could hear his passion for Sitka deer. And Jimmy, my Jimmy, is actually from the state of Maryland, and he had never even heard of it. He's from the western side of the state, and so it was just an overall one of the best adventures we have ever been on. There's some really good outfitters in Dorchester County that, if you get the chance, that I know for people who live out of state, it would be a good opportunity.
Yeah, you almost have to go. I don't think there's very, very, very like very small pockets on public. You have
Well,
to go with an outfitter or somebody, at least go on private land anyway.
and I went on public one day. We went in a boat ride back in the swamp. There is some good public, but you got to know that land and you got to have a. I mean, it's the only bow hunt I've ever been on where I had to have waders. You're literally walking through, the high parts of the land, and then you drop into the swamps. And I got my bow up. Jim's got his camera up, and we're trying not to fall. He actually did fall once, and I kind of caught it on the GoPro. It's pretty funny. You
Nice.
can watch that episode on My Outdoor TV. But yeah, it's and every step you take, your foot's sinking in the swamp, and there's roots and limbs under the dark, deep water. And I mean, I'm an inner klutz. I have an inner klutz that comes out every once in a while, and I was just praying I didn't go under. And it's but the public land is really challenging because you need to know where to go, and you most likely need a boat or a
Yeah.
kind of to get back in there,
Yeah. I looked into it a couple of times to go do it public, and I just didn't seem it's doable in like a, a 5 day or 6 day hunt if you didn't, have any way to get intel, or it's not like you could glass and look for them. It's just like you got to know. Yeah, it's gonna be, it's definitely something I'm gonna do. I just got to figure out how to put it together here.
I hear you.
So, what are the three things that you could attribute your success in the field too. Give me three.
Number one is obvious. It's age. Power to the older ladies.
Stop,
It is
stop.
true though. It's so true though, because I'm proud to say I'm going to be 46 next month, and I've got 2.5 decades under my belt. And it's just experience of being out there, of seeing every situation you can see, having everything go wrong that can go wrong, having luck on your side, having weather turn on you, everything, it's just experience and time in the field. And I would definitely think that that's been, as far as especially getting sponsors, one of my biggest attributes is that I've been doing it a long time. Number two, let's see, attributes to my success. I had the same question, kind of like name one thing, on a podcast weeks ago, and I haven't yet listened to the whole podcast back, but it's going to sound corny and I'm not going to be able to explain it maybe. Sometimes I have a hard time articulating this, but I think one of the biggest attributes and the reasons I have found success is that I don't put labels on people. I don't care if I'm sitting there talking at a sports show to someone who swabs the toilets at the convention or the owner of the biggest camouflage company on the market. I don't care.
Right.
And because of that, I've had so many amazing opportunities come at me. I don't care if you have money. I don't care what your status is. We all are products of our environment and where we come from. We all have our sort of life's path that we're on, and yes, we can, change and grow from that, but I learn from every single type of person out there, and I think because I don't look at people with labels or what's in it for me or because of that, I've met some of the most inspiring people ever that have given me more strength and confidence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I really think part of my success is because of the people that I've met and the inspiration that I've been able to draw from common people just like myself. I'm nothing special. I'm just a gal who lives to be in the outdoors, and because of that, I've met some just incredible people that if I were, and probably I think half the world's like that and the other half maybe isn't, but if you're someone who's always looking into things of what's in it for you, you're going to miss out on amazing people and great opportunity,
Yeah,
the other
that's
three, I think of the other three thing is just timing. Timing. I think I found success with Skullbound because there weren't a lot of solo female hunters out there having owned shows and, having experience. So timing. I happened to meet Jim Kinsey, who's an amazing person, first of all, and an amazing cameraman. Sees, the world through artistic eyes, and he's an incredible hunter himself. Some people might not know that and don't see that as much because he's behind the camera, but Jim is an amazing hunter, an amazing stalker. Great. We work so well together in the
Yeah.
field, making stalks and plans. And we do 80% of our hunts are DIY hunts. And so it's just Jim and I out there. And he has really strengthened me and my skills. And it was just dumb timing that I met Jim. So I think timing is very important. And there's been times too when you look at something that's gone wrong, whether you lose a sponsorship or you thought you did a good job for something, whatever it is, and you might be all mad and frustrated, but I tend to live life of everything happens for a reason. And even though it's really hard to remember that when there are bad things happening or you lose someone special, but I do think even the bad things that happen, we can take them in and learn from them and look at them as maybe it was good timing in our life for that to happen, So timing's.
Cool. Well, I'm going to take that same question, but I'm going to gear it specifically to hunting. Give me like through three rules to bow hunting, rules to live by, or the three things that you do that have allowed you to be a successful hunter.
I think first off, you have to have true passion. You have to have passion for whatever you're doing, whatever kind of hunt you're doing, whether it's bow hunting or long, it's funny because, there's a lot of people out there who's like, oh, I'm strictly a bow hunter. And I was a bow hunter way longer than I ever got into long range rifle hunting with Jim. And I've been really blessed to train with the best in the world. I trained with Chance Gianelli, who is a 2010 world champion sniper. I've trained a lot with Nemo Arms, just a great group of guys. And there's actually, in my opinion, way more skill involved in placing that one shot, especially on an animal. I'm not talking target hunting, that may be, 580 yards out there and you can't get any closer. I've had situations happen like that. There's way more skill involved in that than sitting, in a ground blind and shooting a bear at 20 yards with your bow,
No.
in my
Yeah.
opinion. I think practice, 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 practice for whether you're bow hunting or any, long distance rifle. If you're a handgun, next year it's my goal to take a mountain lion with a handgun. And I don't get out and shoot much with my handguns, but I'm going to. before that hunt. I think practice, I practice a lot, and that's made me successful. And so I think you have to have passion. Like we talked about before, you've got to be in it for the right reasons, because it's gonna go wrong. And if you're in it for the fame, or you're in it for a bit, like we could do a whole podcast on trophy hunting. And I got the museum in my house too. I mount almost every animal I take because I'm thrilled about it. You know, it doesn't have to be a book animal. And that's the passion I'm talking about. That's you want to, you know, experience it all. I want to track. First of all, I want to scout. You know, if I'm blessed enough to launch an arrow or pull the trigger, you know, I look forward to tracking. I look forward to field dressing. I look forward to filling my freezer. I love giving meat away to the neighbors and family. You know, I love the whole process, and that's that passion. Practice, and let me see, one other thing that has caused me to have hunting success is just patience. I think if you put pressure on yourself that you have to get a big trophy, which a lot of shows do, we all know, you know, that a lot of shows are out there of having to get, you know, the biggest bull, the biggest this, that. I think having patience in not, if you don't have that right shot, don't take a bad shot just because it's a trophy. But I have found the success, I think, in my life be a lot because of patience.
That's good advice, for sure. It's one thing I don't have. I don't have a lot of patience. It's my Italian, I guess, in me. I don't know. I really wish I had a lot more patience. I'm actually relatively patient hunter, but not nearly as patient as some of the guys who are much more successful than I am. But and I know that it's been my downfall, especially like on stalks and stuff like that. I stalk too fast. I'm too go. But
I can
so
be like,
it works for me sometimes, obviously, but it doesn't. I got more stories about the one that got away than not. So anyway, well, that's all I got for you. I think I think it was an interesting podcast, really. I feel like even though I had some other hunting questions that we didn't get to, but it just means I get to have you on again.
great.
So I think.
You know what I'd like to talk to you about sometime, and we can do this next time, are the hunts that have been the most memorable for me in my life. And they haven't been when I've been behind the weapon. They've been when I've been really blessed to be with some
Well, you
amazing.
know what? Let's give me one of those. We got time. I don't have time constraints. To me, there's nobody telling me how long I could have my show. Go ahead and give us one of your most memorable hunts.
Well, I'm gonna talk about then how it started. Right now I'm working with a group called Wishes for Warriors that gets combat veterans back out into the woods and mountains or on the water. Not exclusively, but they're the main group I work with. But started with, I met Bo Reichenbach in Missoula, Montana at a football game. It was actually a big event to raise awareness and money for Patriot Foundation, which was helping Bo build a home. And he is a double amputee above the knee, former Navy SEAL. An
Nice.
amazing, amazing man, amazing family. And after meeting Bo and seeing his tenacity still, and I wanted to do something for him. And so we asked him if he wanted to go on an elk hunt. And now, mind you, Bo wasn't a big hunter even before Navy SEAL life. He actually grew up and he was an amazing hockey player. So his weekends were filled with hockey when he was a kid. So he and his dad really didn't get a chance to hunt together much. But he said, yeah, I'm up for it. But, you know, in classic Navy SEAL fashion, he didn't want a canned hunt. He didn't want to just, you know, drive on the for hay fields. He wanted a real mountain hunt. And so we went with Northern Rockies Outfitters, Rich Birdsell, out of the Cascade Mountains in Montana. And it was in, if I had, there have been so many amazing, I've taken three double amputees elk hunting, and they've all been amazing. But this was the one that really sparked my passion for this. And long story short, Bo's prosthetics, they didn't work in the mountains. It was just way too uneven ground. So he's like, meh, that's all right, we'll crawl. He literally took them off, spun these metal plates onto the bottom of his stumps, and that man crawled the Montana mountains for 7 days until he got his bull. And I still to this day tear up talking about that hunt and watching him conquer every hill.
That's
And
crazy.
the second day out, he was so sore because he wasn't used to using those muscles.
Right.
And that's the clip that you might see that's kind of gone a little viral. And that's Jim handed me the camera, put Bo on his back. We had heard a bugle up in a canyon, and we just needed to get to the top of the hill to see in there. And he put Bo on his back for the last 400 yards and carried him up that hill. And it's one of my favorite moments ever in the field. And that whole hunt in and of itself was so inspiring to not Bo, just Bo, but me and Jim and Bo's dad and the whole crew that was on that hunt. And it's inspired me. And those moments to me are to be able to share my passion for hunting with these combat veterans, hear their stories over the campfires at night or sitting around the lodge and what they've been through. It's just made me so appreciative of my lifestyle and so appreciative being a woman in this country and the freedoms that we have because of men and women like that. And
Absolutely.
it's I hope to do that until I die, get the opportunity to take heroes out like that.
That's awesome. I used to do a little work with a I don't actually I'm not going to say the organization, because the reason why I got out, I don't it has nothing to do with that organization. I don't want to put a blight on that. Is that I used to take kids who were, battling cancer or had some kind of sickness, whatever. And we took, I did like four or five where we would take them to go on hunts and stuff like that. And I just kept getting burnt by outfitters, that just really wanted, I mean, like maybe their heart was in the right place, but we would take them out and then it would just be like a really terrible experience. And I was like, oh, this is not a hunt of a lifetime or whatever for a kid that's not going to be able to do this very much longer or ever again. And so it ended up being the opposite for me from, because the experience was, it's one thing if you don't get something, fine, but the experience was bad. And I was like, oh man, this, and it killed me. And so I kind of started, I shied away from it for a long time and I never really fell back into it. But it's definitely something I'd like to do, especially if I start my outfitting business back again. I haven't outfitted myself in a long time, or I got it for a few people back in the day. But if I do it myself and I can control what's going on, and we're doing it in my backyard, so to speak, maybe do it like hunt here in Arizona or something, then yeah, I think it's something I would like to do for sure. Because
Well,
then I
and
know I can control, not you know, you can never really control nature, but you can,
the experience,
offer.
like, and it's really all about the experience. I mean, there are good outfitters, bad outfitters, and you battle stuff, but it is all about the experience. All like I'm taking another one amputee this fall too, and he doesn't care what kind of bull he gets. He just wants to be out in the mountains. Like, and all three guys I've taken have gotten bulls. They haven't been 380 plus bulls. They have not been, and it absolutely makes zero difference. Zero. It's not about the trophy. It's about the experience. So I hear what you're saying, but hopefully you can get back. Maybe start your own.
I gotta tell my wife I'm gonna add another thing to my plate. I might have a lot more time on my hands at that point. So, but no, for real. I definitely like to do something. I just I gotta figure, I gotta find the right venue, so to speak, and put something together. I like to do it with kids, because I don't know, I just feel like they need it more than anybody. So, but anyway, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your knowledge with us, and it's good to shed some light on some of the stuff that we talked about, and clear some of the misconceptions that people build. I enjoyed it.
I appreciate you having me on. Well, we have so much more to talk about, so we need to do
Yeah,
this
for sure.
again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd like to maybe either like mid hunting season or towards the end, maybe do a recap and hear about some of your adventures and stuff like that.
Would love that.
You got any real good hunts, bub, on the books for the season, or?
I really don't have anything totally like off the charts, crazy cool sounding. I'm doing a great. I'm looking forward to my first archery hunt, which is a muley hunt in Utah, and I'm going with a bunch of gals. My girlfriends, I hardly ever get to hunt together, but this time I'm going to be hunting with Jules McQueen, Christy Titus, and I think Melissa Bachman, if she can make it over there to Utah for a muley hunt put on by Matthews. So that's going to be so
Nice.
much fun. Talk about camaraderie. Oh my gosh, those girls
Yeah.
crack me up.
I'll be
And
there.
then
I'll be
I'm
there in
really,
August.
oh yeah.
Not with that, but I'll be in Utah. I'll be in
Oh,
Utah, I'd say. Yeah.
nice.
I'm gonna wear a wig. I'm gonna be hanging out with the girls.
Sure, come on over. I'm taking his name is Dom through Wishes for Warriors. He and I are going on an elk hunt back at Northern Rocky Outfitters in the Cascades. Can't wait for that. Dom is a single amputee, but he's one of those guys who he's a warrior, man. He's a CrossFitter, so he'll be able to literally,
Nice.
climb those mountains. We're gonna have a good time. And I'm doing another veteran hunt in Missouri for the Valor Foundation. They are a homeless shelter for veterans out and other. They do a lot of other things too. They give out sleeping bags and food. And Mark Bayless is an amazing veteran who founded that. And we're going to be giving a hunt away of people can buy tickets to try to win the hunt and come hunting with me for whitetails in Missouri this November.
That's
So that's
cool.
going to be really fun and exciting. But yeah, it's just and then we've got
Awesome.
DIY antelope, elk, and deer in Montana. What else do I've got going on?
So you didn't draw any primo tags?
I didn't draw anything primo this year, but Jim's brother drew the moose tag behind my house.
Oh,
So
wow.
I'm sure any extra days we've got, we're going to be back there looking for a moose for old Uncle Al there. But
Sweet.
no, other than that, no special tags drawn, but I like a general tag as much as the next
Yeah,
person's.
for
So,
sure.
yeah.
Nice. Well,
Yeah.
good deal. Well, we'll definitely have to get you back on and talk about some of those hunts once you get done doing them, for sure.
I'd be
So,
honored.
all right, well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, thanks, John.